This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome to Sailing and Cruising the East Coast of the United States. I'm Bela Musitz.
And I'm Mike Wasserman.
This is our podcast about sailing the East Coast of the United States. In some episodes, we'll focus on passages and destinations. In other episodes, we will talk about boats, equipment, and techniques. And when we come across an interesting person, we'll try to get them as a guest on the show. Before we dive into this episode, we need to say a special thank you to our supporters. Several listeners are supporting the podcast using Patreon. If you would like to join them, you can go to patreon.com/sailingtheeast.
Thanks for the update, Bela. And yeah, thanks to our supporters. Now, today, I'm really excited to hear who we are talking with on this episode.
Yeah, our guest today is Jeff Wettig. Jeff is a longtime podcaster and a Chesapeake Bay sailor. His podcast about sailing, titled Shooting the Breeze, has been around since 2014 and has over 165 episodes. Jeff and I had a great conversation all about sailing and some about podcasting as well.
Yeah, this is a cool idea, Bela. It's neat to see two sailing podcasters kind of sharing some stories. Now, I'm going to imagine that this is going to be a pretty interesting conversation. I'm not sure who's going to wind up interviewing who on this one, but let's get right to your conversation with Jeff Wettig.
Hey, Jeff, this is Bela. Nice to meet you.
Hey, Bela. I'm Jeff. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. So two longtime podcasters. Yep. I've been following your podcast for a number of years, and it was probably one of the many that inspired me to start my own. So thank you.
Oh, well, no problem. Thank you. Yeah, I've definitely listened to over, I would probably say between half dozen and a dozen. I was kind of going through your playlist like, oh, I didn't listen to this one. Didn't listen to that one either, but I did listen to a bunch of them. And I just think it's kind of funny. We also end up on the same guest here and there.
Yes.
Within the same few weeks or months. So we're definitely in the game, as it were, you know, the podcast. Yeah. When I started podcasting, sailing, you know, me and Andy Schell kind of started not exactly the same time. He had one before, a different podcast, and then he started the sailing one, and I came along a few months later. But at the time, he was living in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and I just moved away from there. That's where I grew up. And he grew up a couple miles up the way in Reading area. And I'm like, how did two sailing podcasters come from the same, you know, area where there's no water except for an hour and a half away, you know?
Right.
But it was definitely back then there was like, what, 4 or 5 podcasts. Yeah. Now there's probably more like 20.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's still fewer podcasts than there are YouTube channels.
That is definitely the truth.
Right. And only a very few are making any reasonable amount of money.
Oh, yeah, for sure. There are labors of love for the most part. Yeah, there was, I started watching Delos, I think in 2013, 2014, like right around the time I started the podcast, and I'd interviewed a friend of mine from Baltimore, and he's like, got YouTube up on his like 70-inch screen TV. I'm like, hey, that's pretty cool. You know, you're watching YouTube. What are you watching? He's like, oh man, sailing videos. What, you've never seen Drake Paragon? You know, you've never seen Delos? And I'm like, no, I've never have.
Yeah. Yeah. It is amazing how how this medium is now available to anybody.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Whether it be podcasting or YouTube, right? It's, I mean, 20 years ago, you couldn't do that.
Right.
It was impossible. Yeah. It cost, you know, you have to buy $50,000 worth of equipment and there was no place to stream it.
For sure.
it really is remarkable. And some of the stuff is really good.
Oh yeah.
I mean, holy crap. I mean, I look at like the Delos ones and a whole bunch of them. I look at the, like Delos and that husband and wife team who weren't sailors. I'm drawing the Winds.
The Gone with the Winds, yeah.
Gone with the Winds, right? Yeah. And you look at the production quality, that's just two examples. It's like watching a sitcom, a 30-minute sitcom every week. And these people are pumping those things out every week.
Oh yeah. It's crazy. You know,
the amount of time they must spend is incredible.
And when I first started watching Delos, I think in real time they were like around episode 60 something when I started watching. And I was like, no, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna watch them all and then try and catch up. And I can see the progression because by the time I caught up, then they were getting into like episode 100. And when Guy Curiel came along, he was like in the game of video editing and image manipulation or whatever. Like once he got in the mix and started showing them and helping them out, it was like this corner had been turned.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden there's like slow-mo and you know, these real action shots and you could tell the editing game had just been quadrupled, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And to that end is probably when I stopped trying to make YouTube videos, because how many times can you watch me sail up and down the Northeast River on my 26-foot boat and make it look interesting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and some of those are, it like reminds me of when I was a kid and watching Jacques Cousteau, you know, with his underwater photography and stuff.
Oh yeah,
and some of these channels or National Geographic, they're just great. Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Great.
Once the cameras, like once the GoPro really got really good and they started, you know, being able to take them underwater, and then they had, you know, after that kind of exploded. I don't even know what cameras they're using now, but the whole 4K thing came in. Yeah. And when that happened, then it was like game over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have a GoPro Hero 3 that's clamped up to my cabinet over here that I haven't used in about 6 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to Lancaster. So I'll give you another data point. So for many, many years, I lived in Allentown.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
And,
nice.
And my wife went to school at Kutztown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. My stepson almost went to Kutztown. He went to Shippensburg instead.
Yes. They were big rivals.
Yeah, yeah. And I went to Millersville, so you know, for 13 plus years. So I was in the state system of higher education. I spent some time as a kid. My dad was in a new wave kind of rock band back in the 80s. And they would play at the Airport Music Hall and open up for like bigger names up in in Allentown, and definitely up at the Silo in Reading and different places like that. So I was like 13, 14 running around those towns, following him around.
That's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about the Chesapeake Bay, because I've done a fair amount of sailing there. I've chartered there a bunch of times.
Okay.
Out of Rock Hall predominantly.
Okay.
And my wife and I took our ASA 101, 102, 104 out of Havre de Grace.
Oh, wow. Bay sail.
Yes. Bay sail. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Chesapeake is really great. And I thought one of the things we could do a little bit is talk about sort of the differences between the Chesapeake Bay and Narragansett Bay, which is where my boat is now. And I'll tell you, one of the big differences is on the Narragansett Bay, pretty much every, I would say, 5 out of 7 afternoons, you're going to get a sea breeze that starts building around 1 o'clock.
Right.
And it'll typically gets up to 20 knots by 4 o'clock in the afternoon and stays at 20 till about 5 or 6. And then it starts dying off.
Right.
And I don't remember that sea breeze on the Chesapeake. I remember being there sometimes in July and August, and man, was it hot and there was no wind.
Yeah. And whichever way you want to go, that's the way the wind's going to come from. So want to head south, guess what? You're getting the south wind. And if you want to head back home, then guess what? It turns around and now it's coming out of the north.
That would be
heaven if you could like really rely on a sea breeze like that. And the only time I've seen it in person, in 2015, we ran an overnight race. So in the big scheme of things on the Chesapeake Bay, there's a race called the Governor's Cup. And all the nice, big, expensive boats from Annapolis leave and go down to St. Mary's or somewhere way down south on the bay. And that's the Governor's Cup. So we ran a thing through Walden Rigging, which were friends of mine, called the Sippy Cup.
Yes.
And we would run from Northeast to Annapolis because now there's transient slips available.
Right.
So these other boats are often the thing. So we did an overnight race, and I was not thinking in terms of sea breeze. You know, I'm looking at the forecast, and I'm like, well, the wind's coming out of the kind of the southwest, and that's perfect for me. You know, so I hugged the western shore going past Aberdeen Proving Ground. And as soon as it got dark, 8:30, 9 o'clock, man, the wind just died, and now all of a sudden it's coming out of the east southeast, which is a sea breeze, and I'm on a lee shore. So everybody else who, was smarter than I was and kind of went to the eastern side,
yeah,
were now way ahead of me because now I had to get over there, and that filled in right until like 3-4 o'clock in the morning until it died off. And we just don't see it during the day. See it, I guess, in the middle of the night when nobody's ever out sailing. But that surprised me. And I was like, wow, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out where you're located on the bay. So as I remember, a little north of Rock Hall, the channel splits one to, I guess it's the east, and the other to the west.
It kind of splits there outside of Havre de Grace. So there's that big open area outside of Havre de Grace, yeah. Susquehanna Flats.
Yes.
And kind of to the eastern side of that, when you get up there, there's a marker out there. We call it the A marker, and it's kind of the delineation. So you can either go left and go to Havre de Grace, or you can go right and go up the Sassafras, or you can go a little bit in between left and center, and that's the Northeast River. To the right and center is the Elk River, and in the middle, that's the Turkey Point Lighthouse. If you go up the Elk River, that takes you up to the Bohemia and then the C&D Canal. And that's where the shipping channel runs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're kind of like in no man's land in between Havre de Grace.
Got it. Okay. Now I know where you are. Right.
Yeah, all the way up the Northeast River. And a lot of people shy away from it because it doesn't get you anywhere other than Northeast and Charlestown. But it's all blue on the map, on the chart. So it looks like it's less than 6 feet all over the place. But it really isn't. There's a channel that runs up past the points, which is, 8 to 15 foot deep. And even where you get up to where we are, I mean, unless it's like a really low tide, like if it's been blowing out of the northeast for 3 days, then it might be a problem. But usually it's 7-8 feet deep all the way up through there.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I've been up to Havre de Grace, and then I haven't been any further up than that because there's a bridge up there, I think, that's not too far past Havre de Grace.
Well, if you go past Havre de Grace, yeah, that's the Susquehanna River. You're kind of entering the base of it. And there are bridges there, and I've not gone that way. But if you look at the chart, it gives you the air draft of those bridges. Yeah. And theoretically, I guess we could sail up there, but I've just never chanced it.
Yeah.
There might be a lifting bridge in there that has to be up. And just never went up that way. Plus, you could probably go maybe a mile or two. Maybe not even two, probably a mile, mile and a quarter, and then it starts shallowing up and getting rocky. So
yeah. Well, I've been up the sea. I've been through the C&D Canal a couple of times. So that's not a bad trip.
Yeah, I think that was one of the ones I listened to, one or two of them where you were kind of making that transit.
Yeah,
through there and then up through the coast, I guess, through New Jersey and whatnot.
Oh yeah, yeah. Brought the boat up from Florida.
Yeah.
Friend. So that friend of mine who bought a boat, right? He's never sailed in his life. This is one of those great stories, right? Yeah. And his son, who was in college at the time, was like super into sailing, was on the college sailing team, racing those little dinghies or whatever they race. So they decided to buy a boat. They bought a Passport 40, knew nothing about sailing. And so I went down to help him bring the boat up from Florida. So yeah, that was quite a trip. It was quite a trip.
And that's one thing for me. I'm a bay sailor. I've never actually sailed outside of the Chesapeake Bay other than the Susquehanna River. Yeah. But I've never been ocean sailing. I've been out on the ocean on fishing boats. And like my ex's father, you know, 15 years ago had a 26 foot Trojan that we would go out on like dolphin runs or whatever out of Lewis, Delaware, and just go out in the ocean like 2 or 3 miles.
Yeah.
And sometimes go fishing out there. But yeah, I've never actually sailed in the ocean other than we took a dinner cruise when we went to the Virgin Islands right before the pandemic on a catamaran.
Yeah.
That was nothing. Yeah. That was just like a 2 hours out and an hour back or whatever type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not, I don't want to say I'm not qualified because I've been sailing since 2002, but, I've never actually been on passage or, I've never been out in big waves or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, that friend of mine and his son, they just sailed from Newport to Horta in the Azores. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. So they actually left this morning.
Oh, wow. Horta,
and they're heading to Spain.
Spain. So, wow.
I mean, they have really stepped it up a few notches.
Yeah. And
I interviewed them for the podcast. So their episodes will actually come out before this one.
Okay.
But that's quite, they quite adventurous. And I'll tell you, I've done a couple of passages, not a lot of them. Right. But it's much more relaxing sailing out in the ocean when you're, 5-10 miles offshore. There's nothing to hit.
Yeah.
There's no other boats. You set a point of sail and there's like nothing to do. It's boring. It's very, very different. Cause I also did a trip from Halifax to Newport. So that involved like, I think it was 3 nights to get from Halifax down to Boston, 3 days of continuous sailing.
Right.
And it's just a totally different animal. And if you can do it, I would just, I'd highly recommend it. I don't think you got to do one, a 10-day passage,
right.
But even just to go out and even do an overnight, it's like unbelievable. Overnight is just spectacular.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think I was bemoaning that fact at a boat show to Andy Shell and a couple other people that I'd never been out in the ocean. But I was also telling them about those overnight races. We did like 2 of those overnight races. And he's like, if you're in 3 to 6 foot waves on the bay at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're dodging trawlers and you're dodging barges and ships and trying to figure out what lights these are. And, I think you're qualified.
On the bay. I don't go out on Narragansett Bay at night. I didn't go out on Chesapeake at night. It's just too confusing. And I don't care if you have a GPS and a AIS and all that crap, man.
Right.
There's so much stuff around and I can't tell the difference between a red light, flashing red light on land at an intersection and a red buoy.
You mentioned Rock Hall. When I remember that one night we were out sailing, and again, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning. There's kind of a shallow sandbar area right there off of Rock Hall. And so the waves kind of stack up. So all of a sudden, like we're smooth sailing. And next thing you know, like waves are crashing over the bow. It's like, what's happening? Well, there's a range light south of Rock Hall. And it's just this like deep red orb. And as we're passing it, because I was right in direct line with it, I'm like, this thing looks like it's 30 feet off my, It's just, it looks like it's right there. And I'm trying to figure out what it is, And then I finally dawned on me that it's the range light that's like 3 miles away. And I'm like, this is crazy. It looks like it's right here.
Hey, so what got you started in sailing? Tell me the story.
Oh, boy. So 2002... I worked with a gentleman named Tom and, I was kind of, again, bemoaning the fact that we had vacation. Like I had vacation over July 4th week. And I'm like, I really don't have any money, but I want to go camping, but I want to go somewhere new. And I was thinking about going down to Elk Neck, which is right down there on the Northeast River by Turkey Point. And there's a state park there. And I'm like, even, $2,002 to camp there for the night was like $35. And I'm like, if I go there for a week, it's still going to cost me $300 and I want to rent a kayak and do all this stuff. And I don't know. I don't think I was actually talking to Tom directly. He was just kind of there. And he's like, well, hey, I have a sailboat down on the bay right near there. We're literally 2 miles up from there. I'm like, oh, wow, cool. You know, he's like, why don't you come out with me and, you know, we'll go do some sailing. I'm like, all right. You know, that sounds cool. I said, should I come down just on the weekend? He's like, no. He's like, if we leave Saturday, we can go down to Annapolis and spend the night and come back on Tuesday. And I'm like, mind blown, like, oh, your boat's big enough that we can sleep on it. He's like, oh, yeah, no problem. So that was kind of the meat of it. I got my buddy Chris, who at the time lived down by Annapolis, and I'm like, I called him. I'm like, hey, do you want to do this trip? Because I'll come pick you up on Friday night. You leave your car over there somewhere, and we'll sail down, and then you can go back to work on Monday.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that sounds like fun, you know. So that's what we did, you know, and I didn't have much of a concept of sailboats. Like, I think my uncle had some kind of sunfish or other when I was a kid. And, you know, I remember seeing them at the state parks because we did a lot of camping when I was a kid and we did a lot of canoeing and whatnot. But I'd never been sailing. And then my grandfather actually had like an 18-foot, I don't even know what brand it was. I have a picture of it stuffed somewhere in a photo album. And, I don't know that he sailed it necessarily, but he had like a radio and he would play with that and he would take it and he had it on different slips down in Port Deposit on the river. And it was one of those things where I was like early 20s, you know, I had a kid, I was working three jobs and whatnot. And it was like, I just never got to go with him. And then he passed away. And it was like, it was one of these like holes in my heart type of deal, you know? So when he said about sailboat, I'm like, wow, that sounds great. You know? And, but I didn't really have a concept of, you know, it was a 26-foot McGregor. It's not really a yacht. But, you know, when I got down there, I'm like, the boat was out on a mooring. We had to take a rubber dinghy out to get it. And then we just had like a 9.9 horsepower on the back. And that was enough. You know, you needed that. You needed a cooler and some breakfast treats or something.
Right.
And off we went. And it was just amazing to me that, I mean, aside from the cost of entry, it wasn't really costing that much. You know, what did we do? Buy 5 gallons of gas, you know, a couple cereal bars and some water, you know, and a case of beer or whatever. And that was it. That was your weekend. As opposed to, like I said, spending $300-$400 to go camping and renting a kayak and doing this and doing that. Like, once you paid for the boat, there wasn't a lot of maintenance on it, you know, and paint the bottom every year or whatever. So that was kind of the start of it all, because we took this trip and we had a great time. And I just remember sleeping, we left Annapolis, went up to the Bodkin Creek, which is outside of Baltimore, and literally we just pulled up to the fuel dock and said to the dock guy, because it was Monday or whatever, he's like, hey, if we give you $25, can we spend the night? And they're like, sure, here's the shower pass, here's the pool pass. You know, the bar is right up there, the happy hour starts at 5, you know. And it was like, wow, this is fun. We spent all night hanging out there, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock. We go down to the dock, and I'm literally laying in the cabin, but we had the hatches open, and I'm just like laying there looking at the stars, like falling asleep. I'm like, this is just awesome, you know? And that was kind of it. That got me interested. Following summer, I went down for one more day, and then it was the third summer. So 2004, we went out for another overnight. There's an island outside of Havre de Grace called Sand Island. And a bunch of people from this boat club that my friend was part of were from the Westchester area. And I guess they just had a big party where they got like 3 pontoon boats, loaded them up with everything. Me and my buddy Tom were on his boat. His buddies were on a different boat. And then there was like a third boat and a fourth boat. And we all just congregated there. And you know, we're on the beach. We got tarps set up. There's like 3 grills going. You know, we're just having a great time. And then literally you wade out to the boat that's sitting in 2 feet of water, you know, and then you crash out, you know. And to me, and that was fun and pretty inspiring, because I don't think we used the motor at all. We just literally put up the head sail, sailed off the mooring. It took us 3.5 hours to sail down to the island, threw the hook out, dropped the sail. Next morning, put the sail back up, sailed back, and you know, I was just like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, I ended up buying a 25-foot McGregor. So that was my entry boat.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Yeah. And so it's been 21 years, I guess.
Yeah. And what do you have now?
I have an O'Day 302.
Oh, nice.
1987. So it's one of those gray hauled O'Days. Most times you'll see a 322, which is like the bigger cousin of the 302. But as far as I'm aware, they're still making 302s in Japan. Like somebody bought the molds and the designs and everything, and they still make them over there. Wow. I don't know that 100%, but that's what I've heard. Because O'Day ceased production, I guess, in 1990 or something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it's a great bay boat. This is my fourth boat. And this one I actually got for free. A friend of mine had it. He had a Columbia 28, I believe, somewhere in like 2008, 2009 era. And, you know, we were sailing buddies. And something hit his boat on the mooring and damaged it to the point where they totaled it. So he got a fat insurance check, and this boat was for sale up at the Northeast River Yacht Club. And he bought it, used it for 2-3 years. But then in 2011 or 2012, he had to move. He moved to California. And so this boat sat, and I guess the theory was that his other friend was going to try and sell it for him and take after it, keep it up. And that just didn't happen. So it ended up sinking in the stands, basically. And it got shuffled around the yard a few times.
Sure.
And he just never did anything with it. So in 2018, I got wind of him. I was kind of loosely looking for another boat. I had a Paceship 26 that I had from 2009 on. And I really love that boat. But me and my wife went out on it with the dog. And it was like, we can sit here. This spot right. We can sit in it.
Right.
And that's it. Kind of loosely in the back of my head, like, yeah, maybe I can find like an Endeavor 32 or something that's, you know, cheap, a couple thousand bucks. And I got wind that this one, he was gonna let it go for a song. So I looked at it and I gave him a call, and he's like, well, you know, they're going for 15,000 on Yacht World. I'm like, not this one, sorry.
Right, good luck.
Because like I said, it had been sitting, there's water in it, there's mold everywhere, like the standing rigging's all falling apart, you know, I don't even know what else is wrong with it.
Sure.
So I politely declined. I said thanks but no thanks. And he was in a pinch, and he was moving in like 2.5 weeks to Texas this time, and he's like, what if I just give it to you, because I know you're going to use it, I know you'll bring it back and you'll fix it up, and it'll, you know, be a great boat again. He's like, I just don't have the time. I'm not going to pay anybody to fix it, to try and sell it, and, you know, all this hassle that he would have to go through. Plus he's paying storage on it and everything else.
Sure. Yeah.
So yeah, I got the quote unquote free boat. I think I paid one of the other members a couple hundred bucks that he had kind of loosely had keeping an eye on it for the last couple of years. And that was it. You know, I spent $17,000 over the last 3 years after that, getting it fixed up, getting new sails, getting the engine gone over, getting the rigging redone, yada, 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 you know, all the things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dropped the keel right. A couple times. You know, the first 4 times I tried to launch the boat, it started sinking on me because all the through hulls were rotted out and the keel didn't have any backing through it, and, you know, all that kind of fun stuff. So
right.
Once I got it floating, it was great, you know.
Yeah. Your $17,000 free boat.
Free boat, exactly. My wife keeps saying, you know, well, you could have spent 15 on it and spent 17 on top of it, you know.
That's true.
So
that's true.
You know, beware the free boat, though, you know.
Yeah, I like the way your wife thinks, though. I like the way your wife thinks.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's definitely an upgrade from the Paceship. The Paceship, I think, sailed better. It was a 74, and it had more of a classic hull shape to it and a fin keel. And I mean, literally, you could feel it kind of go, and it would find its groove, and then that was it. You could just hold on to it lightly, and it would just keep going. This one's a little more tender, where the wind gusts, all of a sudden you're like, whoop, you're over. And it kind of comes back, and then it finds its way, you know. But still a great sailing boat. I like the layout. It's got the cabin in the back, kind of along the side, and then the cabin V-berth up front. Little galley, you know, kind of separated from everything. And I still have 2 full bench seats on either side with a table that I can sit at.
Yeah, that sounds very nice. Yeah, very nice.
And it's just crazy because it came with everything. You know, I got the hot water heater. It had the autopilot, which sadly stopped working this year, but or last year. But it's got a full canvas enclosure. I'm like, when I'm pulling this stuff out of these tubs, I'm like, what is this? You know, I mean, this is like, if I had to get this enclosure and all the canvas redone, it would cost me 10 grand. You know, it's
that's
like,
right.
And the Dodgers, I've been sewing it every year. Bimini, the same thing, but all the side panels and everything are in pristine condition because I hardly ever use them. And I guess they never really used them either, you know.
Yeah.
So just it has the right Yanmar engine in it, you know, all that stuff. I take umbrage with some of the decisions they made when they engineered the thing. But other than that, you know, it's a very nice free boat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that sounds great. Sounds like a perfect boat for the bay.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And does it have a swing keel or is it fixed?
It's one of these fixed wing keels.
Oh, okay.
And it kind of sits. I've looked at like Catalinas and stuff, and they have kind of a longer wing to it. This thing is very stubby and very wide, and it sits almost underneath the mast. Like, it's just kind of a weird configuration when you look at it. Like I said, I've looked at other Catalinas and stuff that have the wing keel, and I don't know. They say it's a lifting keel, so when you get underway, it forces pressure up to whatever. It's 80s technology.
Yeah.
Fuck, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
very nice. So you have any sailing trips planned this summer?
This summer I do not really. I'm kind of in between. The company I worked for closed down in April, and so I found myself suddenly needing a job, and which sucks because I had gone back there because they gave me my time back and I had 4 weeks vacation, and if I made it to the 62, I would have had 5 weeks of vacation, you know. Now suddenly I'm starting over, but Bryant Gorell, he started the Upper Chesapeake Bay Facebook group, and I did a podcast with him like 5 years ago, and we did a bunch of Zoom calls over the pandemic that he sponsored, and, you know, we've been friends online for a long time. He's an HVAC manager for a mechanical contractor down in Towson, Maryland, which is like 40 minutes south of here. And, you know, he reached out. He's like, do you want to be an HVAC tech? And I'm like, you know, I had some building maintenance experience and things like that. And I just told him, I said, you know, I've changed filters, belts, greased motors, done all this kind of stuff. But if you want me to be the guy that shows up at somebody's house because their system's not working,
right,
you know, that's not me. He's like, oh, you'll figure it out. You know, we'll send you to training, whatever. And then we'll give you a van. Cause I was like, I don't feel like driving my car another 20 minutes extra. Right. And he's like, oh, we'll give you a van. Don't worry about that. And all this, every time I brought up an issue, he's like, you know, he delayed it with something else. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it a try. You know what I mean? So that's kind of where I'm at now. I just got through my first 90 days there. And just actually started taking vacation. I took a couple days this week. Originally, I thought we might get out for like a 5-day trip. But just with the weather and the storms every day, and I got all these house projects that I've been putting off. So I nixed that sailing trip. And I only have like another week. So we're taking a week between my stepson's getting married October 7th and the Annapolis Boat Show is the next weekend. So I figure I'll just take that week. And if I haven't hauled the boat by then, maybe I'll either haul it. I'm actually considering maybe taking the boat to Annapolis and then hot footing it home on Sunday, because that's one of the things my wife my wife's dad and stepmom and family used to live in Annapolis, so we always had a place to go. Past 3 or 4 years, it's like I'm trying to get Airbnbs and hotel, bad hotels near Baltimore Airport, because I'm always too late and trying to book them. You know, I'm like, wouldn't it be so nice if I just brought the boat and threw the anchor and there it was, you know. So I'm considering that. I haven't decided yet if I'm going to do that. But anyway, I have some long weekends between here and there, so I'm hoping to get out at least a couple times overnight just in the local area. I had one in June where we had like a micro cruise at Hans's Point Yacht Club where I belong. And we had like 8 boats, and we just literally went across the river, dropped the hook, and then we had 23 people on my friend's Island Packet 380.
Wow.
With, you know, we had food, we had drinks, and then my friend Matt came over with ice cream from his boat because he just put a freezer in.
Wow, very nice.
He even put ice cream truck music on his when he was dinging back over.
That's pretty so good.
Yeah, we had we had a really good time. So I'm kind of looking forward to doing a little bit more of that this year, and then hopefully next year I'll get back to, usually in the past, you know, for the past 13, 14 years, I've been going at least for a week. Back in 2012, I think it was my big trip. I went out by myself, but I was with 2 other boats, and I was out for 12 days, and we made it all the way down to Tangier Island, which is in Virginia. And yeah. That was some pretty good, because we had some, we holed up in Solomon's Island because of small craft advisories. You know, it was kind of like, okay, Tuesday there's going to be a small craft advisory, so Wednesday we'll leave. Well, Wednesday was a small craft advisory, and Thursday was a small craft advisory.
Right.
So kind of like, well, we got to go if we're going to go, so we might as well just leave. And, you know, that was some sporty conditions to be single-handing a 26-foot boat around the middle part of the bay.
Yeah.
But that was, like, my big trip. But, yeah, we've been all over, at least from, like, Oxford up. So I've been to Oxford, I've been to St. Michael's, I've been to Rock Hall, I've been to Annapolis, South River, West River, Rhodes River. I haven't been into Baltimore proper yet, but we go into, like, Bodkin Creek. And then, of course, there's Wharton Creek, Fairley Creek, Still Pond, you know, up into the Bohemia and the Sassafras and Georgetown. And I've never actually gone to Havre de Grace either. We've gone up to Sand Island a bunch of times, but I've never actually stayed the night in Havre de Grace.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're all, the thing about the Northeast River is, I mean, it's 4 or 5 hours to anywhere. You know, if you're going to go to Still Pond, that's a whole afternoon into the evening of sailing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we tend to split it up. But I have motored back from St. Michael's twice now in one shot, and that's a 10 or 11 hour trip.
Wow.
And
you know, one of the great things about that I remember about the Chesapeake is that there's just so many great anchorages. It's like everywhere there's a little nook and cranny that you can pull into, and it's mud. Yeah. You can get a reasonable hold.
Yep.
And that, I miss that, because the Narragansett's not like that, right? There's actually very few anchorages, at least the ones that I have found. And I got to tell you, when I anchor, I get anchor anxiety. I don't sleep well, but on the Chesapeake, these little coves are so well protected, you know, on like almost, you know, like 340 degrees, they're protected. It's just, I miss that. I really miss that.
Oh yeah. I've been through some blows already where like we knew it was coming type of thing.
Yeah.
And we would go all like the one time it was in September, and it was one of these cold fronts was coming through, and it was dropping from like 75, 80 to the next day was going to be like 45.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that wind came in and we were tucked away up in the Sassafras River. And,
you
know, it blew like hell, you know, it's still, we had pretty good protection. And there's just all those creeks, and it's almost like it's to the point, you know, I've been sailing for 20 years and there's many creeks within 2 days sail that I've never been up, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, I was thinking you were talking about doing HVAC stuff.
Yeah.
A friend of mine and his wife, probably 30 years ago, sold everything, bought a catamaran. And they've been sailing. Or actually, I interviewed them for the podcast. And the first year they were out on a catamaran, they were down in Florida, and she took a marine HVAC course. You know, it was like 10 weeks or something, and she worked for a company for like a year while they were down kind of in Florida outfitting the boat and doing that stuff.
And
this is how they pay for it now, because every place she goes, people need air conditioning, right? And so it's worked out really well, and that, you know, pays really great, and she works when she wants to, and when she doesn't want to, she doesn't, and they hop off to another island or something. And boy, I tell you, those trades are really important, and they're great ways to sort of, you know, make a living.
And I thought about it too, because, you know, after a couple of years here, I'll be a journeyman, and you can pretty much go wherever and do whatever you want. And, you know, my boss is always in the Facebook group. I just, a couple of weeks ago, somebody was like, "Hey, my boat air conditioner is not working.
Exactly.
I'm like, oh, I'm Freon," you know, and he's like, "Oh, it's probably not that. It's probably something else," you know. I've heard, I don't know if you have listened to Franz at the Sailing in the Mediterranean and Beyond podcast, but I remember him telling stories of being in Turkey trying to find somebody, anybody that would work on his refrigeration issue. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's definitely something I've considered down the line. Like, I'm a fairly mechanical, believe me, I look at guys that are really mechanical, I'm like, that's not me. But you know, I know how to turn a wrench. I've gotten my diesel engine up and working when it wasn't, and things like that. You know, I'm sort of handy with the fiberglassing and stuff like that. So I think when I'm a little bit older and it's time to like try and find something different, maybe I'll find a hidey hole in a marina and just say, yeah, open for business.
Do you ever think about, you know, selling everything and living on a boat full time?
Definitely considered it, thought about it, kind of in the real world, because it sounds great, you know. And if you're cruising, like you're actually going from place to place to place to place to place to place, that sounds great. But I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm like, unless it's a really big boat, I like my house. I like having a garden. I like having the lawn. I like air conditioning. I like the sofa. I like the couch. I like my office nook. You know, so I'm kind of in the, you know, obviously I'm a ways away from retiring or doing anything like that. But I don't think I would sell everything. I think I would try and figure out a way to, like, maybe 6 months on the boat, 6 months off the boat or something like that. Because believe me, even going out in the bay for a week and like those 12 days, on day 12, I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to be comfortable and, you know, that sort of thing.
No, I agree. I'm like you. I don't think I can see myself living on a boat 12 months a year. I could definitely see living on it for, you know, 2, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I could even see taking it down to Florida or something, you know? But, you know, Florida's easy. You can take it halfway and hop off and fly home for a couple of weeks. I like my house. And even though I have a pretty good sized boat and the bed's nice and comfortable, my bed at home is more comfortable.
And we'll see. You know, once I get my kind of vacation reestablished in a couple of years, I had always thought about, all right, if I got, say I got 4 weeks vacation. I could take two or whatever, some version of that, and like go to like, because I really want to go to like Block Island and up your way. Especially in the summer. My friend Luke has been doing it on one of our boats at the yacht club. He's actually in Maine for like the third season in a row. It's not even his boat. He's just kind of taking care of it and, you know, playing along. But I was thinking, you know, maybe I could do like 2 weeks up, 2 weeks back, or a week up, leave it sit, come back, do another week, go somewhere else, put it somewhere for a couple of weeks, come back. You know, and eat up those 4 weeks kind of doing a big round kind of Long Island type of trip or something like that. That's not terribly far. I would go down the ICW, but I think once you get to the end of the bay, there's a kind of a big gap between going somewhere where you can actually sail. You know, unless you're going offshore, but going up north, if you can make that jaunt from Cape May to Block Island, should be doable in a 30-foot O'day, you know what I mean? Given the right weather conditions. And trying, you know, the hard part to that, I guess, is keeping to a schedule, that's a week at a time. But that was one of the things I had thought about. And then what I also want to do, and will happen one of these years, is I'm going to either charter like in the VVI for a week, or I'm going to get on board like Sail Libra or one of Andy's boats or something on some kind of passage.
Yeah.
Libra is nice because he kind of structures it Saturday to Saturday, whereas Andy's a little more loosey goosey and, you know, it might be 10 days. It might be 12 days. Right. Who knows? You know what I mean?
Right.
But Libra is a nice boat. I met Captain Ryan Rayfield. I interviewed him even before I met him. And then he came up to Baltimore a couple summers ago. I was able to check out the boat, and it's a nice boat. And so anyway, that's kind of in my back of my mind. What, you know, I'll take a week in the next year or two and do one of those kind of trips.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
Well, you know, coming up from where you are up to here, you can do that without doing any overnights, because you can go Cape May to Atlantic City.
Right.
Then Atlantic City to Sandy Hook.
Yep.
And then Sandy Hook through the East River, New York City into Long Island Sound. Yep. So you can do it on day hops. If you don't want to sail overnight, or you don't want to go out, you know, sort of, because Cape May to Block Island, you're offshore.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's a good 2-day trip offshore. Yeah.
Yeah, you're offshore, which is fine, but that's sort of a different level of anxiety.
Anxiety. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. my friend Luke and my friend Julie, you know, they're both, well, Julie's an actual captain and instructor. Luke's just been around enough to know better, you know what I mean? And the last three summers, one of our members has a Sabre 38 and actually did the Annapolis to Newport race this year.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And once they finished that race, they just kept going. And the boat's up in Maine. The first year, they just kind of stayed right around Block Island, Mystic, kind of that area, came back. The second year, then they went all the way up to Newport and Gloucester and Maine. And now this year, they just skipped all that pretty much and went straight to Maine. And then maybe they'll hit that on the way back or whatever. But you know, they had some sporty conditions that I'm not so sure. I think my boat would handle it, but I don't know that I would.
Yeah. Well, you know, the great thing is the weather forecast for like the next 3 days is pretty damn good.
Good, yeah.
But once you get past 3 days, it's a crapshoot.
Yeah. If you can make it in those 2 to 3 day windows, you know, and have something you can, and even then they were like, I think the one trip home, they were like, it was calling for like 15 to 20, but it was 30 to 35.
Yeah. But, you know, I find the limited experience I find is that it starts to get uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And then if you're offshore, you have no exit. I mean, you're kind of stuck there, and you're not going to sleep well.
Right.
You're not going to get food. You know, you just start getting tireder and tireder.
And
I'm at that age where I need my sleep.
Sleeping. <You know? laughs> Well, a friend of mine actually from high school, he used to be a pontoon boater, and he bought my old pace ship from me back in 2018 when I got the new boat. They actually upgraded last year to a Contest 36 or 37. Very nice boat. And they kind of walked into a great deal because my friend Ralph, who owned that boat, spent 2 years fixing it up because he was going to go offshore.
Yeah.
And he did all the hard work. And then he decided he wanted a steel boat, and off he went and bought a steel boat and sold them this Contest for a pretty good friend price, you know? So they have that boat, and I don't know that they really have plans on taking it offshore, but I'm like, in the back of my head, maybe I could convince him to do some kind of offshore trip on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the future. 'Cause that's,
you know, offshore, the trip I did from Nova Scotia down to Annapolis was, you've heard about the Salty Dogs, right? The Salty Dog Sailing Association. So they do a trip up north every year.
Yeah.
And so you can join the Salty Dogs Sailing Association as a associate member.
Right. Which
then gives you access to their events and stuff, but also a lot of those people looking for crew.
Crew, yeah.
So that's how I got to sail from Halifax down to Baltimore. Was a guy went on the rally from Virginia up to Nova Scotia, and then his crew left, and he was looking for another person. And so we connected, and that's a great way to sort of get, you know, some of that type of experience under your belt. And it didn't cost me anything other than airfare. So,
and it was only what, 3 or 4 day trip, something like that.
Well, it was longer than that because we went Halifax to Boston. I actually went through the Cape. Spent like a couple days there waiting for weather, and then we went Long Island Sound through New York City, which is like a trip that everybody should do. I mean, seeing New York City from a boat is just eye dropping. And then it was Sandy Hook. Then Sandy Hook all the we did nonstop Sandy Hook all the way up to the what's the first big anchorage when you're coming out of the canal on the it would be the east shore on the Chesapeake
probably so, there's Chesapeake City's kind of in the middle of the canal and then
right no this is you come out of the canal you're in the Chesapeake Bay you're heading south
it's probably Bohemia.
Yeah, it was one of those. Anyway, we spent a couple days there waiting for weather, and then from there we went to. So it was 7-8 days.
7-8 days. Okay. So we'll see what you know. Like I said, if I can get into a charter situation, you know, my buddy Tom, the guy that kind of wrote me into the whole sailing thing, like he spent a lot of time in like the 90s chartering boats down in the islands, and you know, he's early on. You know, he's like showing me pictures and they had like some kind of video and I'm just like, oh, this is awesome, you know. So someday that's what I'm gonna get into. At least on a vacation kind of standpoint, you know what I mean?
We did a fair amount of that, and a lot of it down in Chesapeake. We also chartered down in Tampa Bay. And I tell you, it's a great way to it really helped us figure out the boat we want. And what works for us, for my wife and I, you know, so when we said, okay, we're thinking about buying a boat, we went and chartered a whole bunch of different types of boats, you know, Catalinas, Island Packets, Hunters, you know, Beneteaus, Junots, kind of the ones that are sort of in our space range. So, okay, we don't like this. We like this. This works for us. So we came up with a list of, we got to have these things. Right. So there's certain things we got to have. Like, for example, we wanted to have a master cabin where we don't have to climb over the top of each other to get out of bed at night. Right. So that, so that basically either says you got a big V berth or you have a fore and aft master cabin in the back. And the other thing that we had to have was we had to have a pass through stern. So. So you can get on and off the boat really easy, whether it's from a dinghy or you're swimming or at the dock, right? So you're not have to climb. You don't have to get a stepladder out to get on the boat. So we had a list of things like that, which then narrows it down really fast. It gets you focused, right?
Especially the transom, because either you get a sugar scoop. We have a sugar scoop, which I love. I would get either a sugar scoop or a pass through, and you're cutting out anything pre 1987 at that point, pretty much, you know. And for me, looking for the cheaper boats, you know, that's kind of your wheelhouse is the mid 80s up through the early 90s, you know what I mean? But yeah, that's once you decide, and that's kind of where we had for a long time, we had an old lift, like sling lift, that we would pull with a tractor, and it limited our weight and our width for the boats we could launch. So we were literally 11 feet wide and like 20,000 pounds was tops, you know. So for a long time, for like 2-3 years, I was like looking, just idly looking, you know, I'd be at work looking at Craigslist or whatever. And sailboat data, you know, checking out all these boats. And I kind of landed on the Pearson 33-2, which was like an 87 to 89 production run. And it had like the aft cabin with the, you know, and then the 322s were similar, but that the Pearson, you know, Pearson, I just always thought had a better name for whatever reason. I don't know if that's true or not, but I saw one, we raced against one in one of those sippy cups. And after I saw it in person, I'm like, that's what I want, you know? And, I actually looked at one in Havre de Grace when Tidewater still had a brokerage. They had one there. And I was like, man, you know, if I just had the spare, whatever, $30,000 or whatever it was, And that's kind of when I looked at this O'Day, I'm like, well, man, this is really close to that kind of layout. And it's got the sugar scoop. It's, like I said, it had the hot water heater. It had all the extra bells and whistles. It was just in poor condition. You know, it'd been right. sitting around for 8 years or whatever. So, but when I saw that, I was like, man, you know, that I could really get into this kind of layout. And I still love that for that layout for like a bay boat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I were planning on living aboard or you know, doing more voyaging type stuff, obviously then that changes the whole scheme of things.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that you have to be realistic about how you're going to use the boat. Right. You hear a lot of people talking about, well, I want to get a blue water boat, blah, 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 blah. But they never go out of the bay.
Which is okay.
If that's what they want, that's wonderful. Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
think about how you're actually going to use the boat, because these boats are designed with different parameters in mind.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And you know, they behave differently.
Oh, for sure. And how much of a project do you want? You know,
right. Because how much of a project do you want?
You know, the bigger the boat, everything gets exponentially more expensive and harder to deal with, you know.
That's right.
So
that's right. And I don't care whether it's a new boat or an old boat, there's going to be projects.
Well, I have a listener in San Francisco area, and I'm trying to remember the boats that she bought, but I think the first time she reached out, I think it was some kind of Genoa or whatever. Something in the mid 40s. And, you know, her plan was to, you know, she wanted to go cruising around, I don't know about around the world, but definitely do some far distance cruising. And for whatever reason, she was kind of still stuck at the dock after like a year or two. And she's like, things are just breaking.
Yeah.
Like the deck is spongy and whatever. Like she was finding all these problems. And, she basically reached out like to me and like, I think Matt Rutherford, cause he was a broker at the time and was asking him all kinds of questions about what kind of boat do you think I should get? And she ended up going with an older, again, I don't know if it was a Passport or what the boat was off the top of my head, but more of a traditional like blue water boat, not necessarily a production boat, you know?
Yeah.
And now she's finally off cruising. I don't think they got much further than going around San Francisco at this point, but you know, it's not because of the boat, because she fixed everything.
Right.
She had a punch list and decided I'm going to get an older boat and I'm going to fix all this stuff, but it's going to last once I'm done with it, you know?
Right.
And that's kind of where she's at now, because if she was still chasing a spongy deck after 5 years, you know, who knows? And I think that's kind of what happened to, if you ever watched Sailing Nervous,
yes.
A guy named they were from this area, and I got latched onto him pretty early on because he looked at some of the marinas around and some of the boats. Like one of the boats he looked at actually in my yacht club right now, sitting on stands for the last 5 years. Anyway, like they went south, they did the whole thing. You know, they sold their stuff, they got on the boat, they went south, and they had all these problems, and it came down to like where the mast was stepped and the whole support structure of the boat. And I don't even know what the resolution was, but the resolution ultimately was they got rid of the boat and they're not doing it anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
So again, it comes down to what you're willing to deal with, I guess, and what you're actually going to use it for.
Right. No, I think you're spot on. It really has to be realistic about how you're going to use it and be really realistic about the amount of time you have to give it.
Oh yeah.
And the skill level you have for fixing things.
Well, and even my boat, like I said, I tried to launch it 4 times before I finally got it squared away. And I mean, I inspected everything before I bought it and I'm like, well, all right, you know, it's dirty. I can get the motor running. I'm pretty sure, you know, the running rigging I can replace. That's not a problem. You know, I called the rigging people to come check my standing rigging, and they said, you got to replace this, you got to replace that, whatever. I'm like, all right, that's just money. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But when the boat kept sinking, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? You know, I ended up having to figure out how to jack the deck up so I could get the compression post out so that I could get to the one bolt that's underneath the compression post that you can't get any other way, you know. Plus, you have to buy a torque wrench and an 18-inch extension and a deep ratchet. And, you know, that's $200 worth of tools just to get at the bolts, you know.
Right.
And then I had to Because the thing was, when I lifted it out of the water that first time it was filling up, I saw water running out of the keel, like from inside.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'm like, that's not good, you know. So I had to figure out a way to lift it up. We got the compression post out of the way. I undid all the bolts. We got the boat lift trailer underneath it, kind of lifted it straight up, and then the keel was just kind of sitting there. And, you know, I had to figure out all that just on my own, because I can't pay anybody to come do any of that, you know.
Right.
And then I had to replace all the through hulls, which I thought I did. And then the last time around, I'm like, oh, I forgot the one under the galley sink. You know, that's the one that's leaking.
Of course.
So, you know, you got to just remember, things aren't going to go as planned, number one. And if you think it's going to cost you $5,000 to fix the boat, double it, and then double the time you think it's going to take.
Yeah.
And there's still going to be something wrong, but, you know, you could probably live with that. You know, what can you live with? What can you put the boat out in? Just actually get it in the water and have it on a mooring so you can at least enjoy it, even if you're not going sailing, versus what do you got to do on land? You know, the sails, the first time I went sailing, I'm like, well, these sails are roached pretty hard. But I was like, in hindsight, I should have bought a new main first, but I ended up buying a new jib first. And then my main ripped out the following year. And it's like, well, I guess I got to replace that one too, you know. And so it's a process, and it's all kind of I remember one of my listeners, Mike, reached out. He had bought like a Pace Ship 23. And he was just like, you know, there's too many projects. It's leaking this. It's doing that. It's doing that. He's like, I just want a boat that I can turn the key and go. And he ended up buying like a MacGregor 26 with the big engine on the back or whatever, but it was fairly new. And he's like, great, I don't have any projects. I turn the key, the engine starts, I go, you know, I put the sail up, it sails, you know. Now he's on into a catamaran, so that must have been successful.
but
can you afford to get a turnkey boat? And even if it's turnkey, does that really mean that you're going to have a project-free existence? Probably not.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of those activities where depending upon your tolerance, I mean, you can sail with blown out sails.
Sails, yeah.
Right? Or you can spend $40,000 on Mylar sails.
Exactly.
And the boat's still going to sail on either one of those.
Yeah.
It sort of depends where you want to play in that spectrum. And you know, there's sort of safety things like, okay, making sure the boat's going to float and the standing rigging's not going to fall down. But other things, you know, you may not have to fix.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I still believe I've had a couple of people ask me like suggestions on buying boats or whatever. Like, and I mean, I know boat prices have increased the last couple of years and there's more demand or whatever, but I'm a firm believer of like a $5,000 boat is always going to be a $5,000 boat, no matter what, you know, or a $3,000 boat is going to be a $3,000 boat. If you're looking at a budget and you're like, I don't have a lot of money to spend, I mean, you can get a smaller 18 to 22 foot Catalina for $4,000 and chances are the sails are going to work. And if you've got a trailer, you can either park it at your house or park it at one of these storage lots or whatever. And it's not going to cost you that much money. You know, we spend about right now, since I have a 30 foot boat, I'm spending like $1,200 a year to keep my boat at Yacht Club year round. I mean, what's it going to cost me if I want to go to Ocean City or some big Virginia Beach or Myrtle Beach for a week? You know, it's going to cost you $1,500 for a family. You know what I mean? If not 2,000, you know what I mean?
Right. Easy.
Easy. And I get sunsets and overnights and on the water like for 6 months out of the year.
No, if you want to do it low cost, you certainly can. Right. My first boat was a Catalina 22.
Right.
And we had that for like 30 years and it was great.
Yeah.
And it was like, I think I bought it for like $7,000.
Yeah.
And 30 years later sold it for like $6,000.
$6,000. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it cost you $1,000 for 30 years worth of
ownership. And I don't think, you know, I don't even, I mean, I didn't change the sails. I didn't change any of the running rigging. I didn't change anything on it. I think that was it. I didn't even put bottom paint on it because it was in fresh water all the time.
Fresh water.
So it was just great.
There's an older couple that they bought a Catalina 22 specifically so they could trailer it to Florida. And they just basically went to RV camps and whatnot, and they would launch the boat, park their truck and their trailer, and they would go out for a week or two, come back, get on the trailer, drive somewhere else, camp out, and just camp in the boat, you know, even if the mast was down or whatever. And they spent an entire winter, I guess, you know, traipsing around Florida in their 22-foot boat, you know, and it cost you a little bit of money to trailer it back and forth with lower gas mileage or whatever, but you're just basically paying RV rates, you know, at campgrounds, you know, and then you go out, go sailing for 2-3 weeks at a time, depending where you're at. So that, there's definitely an argument to be made for go small.
Yeah.
Especially when you're starting out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Hey, Jeff, we've been chatting for like an hour here. I think we should probably start wrapping her up here.
Cool.
Yeah. So, well, hey, I really appreciate getting together and seeing you eyeball to eyeball and chatting with you and getting to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, definitely. Before you go, I just, you're talking about Narragansett Bay. And
So
what is a quick description of your home sailing grounds, and what kind of sailing do you end up doing? Mostly just evenings and weekend?
Yeah. So, we're at the north end of Narragansett Bay. Uh-huh. It's about a 3 to 4 hour sail to Newport.
Okay.
You know, Newport's sort of your equivalent of Annapolis.
Annapolis. Yeah.
And the prices are probably about the same.
Same. Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, so we have our boat and marina. Uh-huh. So what we typically do, so we belong to one of the Safe Harbor marinas. So Safe Harbor is this private equity firm that bought up a whole pile of marinas. So our boat's at one of those. Mainly it's at that marina because my son, I have two sons, and my younger son lives a 5-minute walk from that marina.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And he likes to sail. So, you know, it's perfect. So anyway, if you keep your boat at a Safe Harbor marina, you can stay at any other Safe Harbor marina for free.
Oh, wow. Like a transient.
A transient. Exactly. And, you know, they have an app for making online reservations and stuff. Now, it's on a as available basis, of course.
Right.
I'll tell you, you know, New England, it's $4 or $5 a foot for a slip. Right. And my boat's 45 feet long. So you can do that arithmetic. I mean, I can stay in a hotel.
Right. In a nice exotic resort.
Yeah. So what we end up doing mostly, to my wife and I, one of my sons comes with us and his family, sometimes the grandkids come with us. So we end up going marina to marina. It works out great. You know, we go sail for 5 or 6 hours, stop at a marina. Most of these marinas have swimming pools. So if the grandkids are with us, that's great for them. You can get off the boat. You know, we can plug in. So if it's really hot, I can run the air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know, and they have our boat's got two heads on it and two showers. But, you know, the shower up at the marina is always bigger and nicer.
Sure. Exactly.
So that's basically what we do is we sort of bop around from marina to marina. And sometimes that means some of these marinas have moorings. So we'll hop on a mooring. And like I said, when I anchor out, I never sleep well. If I'm anchoring out on your boat, I'll sleep like a baby.
I'm
anchoring on my boat.
Because you're not responsible.
Right. I don't care about anchor alarms. I don't care about any of that stuff. I just don't sleep well. So we have figured out our niche, right? Niche is fundamentally day sails and hopping from marina to marina. My older son and I, and for 1 week, and a friend of mine from skiing on a different week, we went out. So I went out on two separate occasions for a week with my son once, and then my friend, where we did some more adventurous sailing, right? We went longer distances, got outside of the bay, et cetera. My wife does not like big rollers, right? We know that. So, why push it, right? Why have her be miserable? That makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would love to, if I could get one of my sons into, you know, taking a month off from work, I'd love to like go down to the Chesapeake or go up to Maine or something like that. I'm willing to do that. And I got a beautiful boat for doing it, but, it works out great. We're doing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we should do this again sometime down the road and we can flesh it out a little bit more.
Yeah. Sounds great. I'd love to do that. It was a real pleasure chatting with you. And I really enjoyed it, Jeff.
Say hi to your co-host for me. What is that, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Mike. He's in
Germany,
Mike.
Right?
He's in Germany. Yeah. Yeah. Knows nothing about sailing.
Yeah, I know. It's quite the dynamic.
Yeah, yeah. It's
a
lot of fun.
When I started my podcast, I thought and felt that I needed somebody to bounce things off of. So that's why my friend Chris is Chris Smoker is my co-host, even though he's very rarely on the podcast. But it's kind of like he's like part of the crew, you know what I mean?
Yes.
He's on masthead because he was there at the beginning, because literally the first couple episodes was literally me and him sitting around the fire in the middle of winter at my yacht club talking about what I wanted to do with the podcast. Because
right.
I didn't think me speaking into the microphone and just yammering on was going to be successful. So kind of drug him into it. And then, after the first couple episodes, I got more comfortable. And, you know, he still comes on from time to time if we have something going on or he comes sailing with me or whatever. But, it's always nice to have a compatriot.
Yeah, it's worked out well. So he and I both were professors, business school professors.
Okay.
And he left where we were at and moved to Germany. And he's a professor over there. And and after he left, we started a business podcast. Because we wanted to kind of keep working together, and we really clicked when we were working at the same place. So we started this business podcast, same format. I typically do an interview, and then he and I sort of do an intro and a summary. Then after I got the boat, I said, I think I want to start a sailing podcast.
Right.
And I said, Mike, why don't you be on the podcast with me? Because it was working really well. He goes, but I know nothing about sailing. I go, that's perfect.
Exactly.
Right?
And that's
awesome. Yeah, it seems to work out okay, but that's the story on how it ended up being that way, right?
Basically, in lieu of him, then, you know, I wrote my wife into it on occasion, so, you know, I have somebody to blather on with, you know, instead of just at, so.
Right.
But yeah, it's great meeting you, and I've enjoyed your podcasts over the years. I'm going to try and, now that I have like an hour drive to work, and I'm constantly in the van driving around Baltimore, which I think you can imagine what the traffic's like. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, so I'm kind of working my way through the ones I haven't on all fronts, you know what I mean? One I haven't been able to keep up with. So try and get yours into the mix. And because I did listen to the one you had with Simon and Sawyer.
Sawyer.
So I listened to those, the most recent ones that were up. So listen to those. And then we had Shea Love was on mine and yours.
Yeah.
Peter Gibbons Neff was on yours and mine.
Yeah.
Scott Wells, I think, was he on yours?
Scott Wells.
He was on mine. And he lives right down the road from me and at the club. You know what I mean? So he's always a good one to chat with. So anyway, it's been great. Talking to you and listening to your podcasts, and hopefully we can keep doing this.
All right. Let me stop recording here and we'll do that.
Well, Bela, this really wasn't an interview, was it? Really, it was more like a conversation between two old friends, and I really liked the back and forth. Now, it seems to me that you two have somewhat different approaches to sailing. What do you see are the main similarities and differences in your approaches, both to sailing and to podcasting?
Well, that's a good question, Mike. I think one of the biggest things is Jeff works. he has a full-time job and I'm retired. So I have a lot of flexibility in sort of when I go sailing, and even when I'm sailing, if the weather's not great, you know, I can sit in the harbor a day. It doesn't matter to me. So I have a lot more flexibility and a lot more time to sort of tailor what I'm going to do. So I'm doing it when it's enjoyable to me, and not driven by time constraints. I think that's the biggest observation that I have. And, you know, I've been retired now a little over three years. And, you know, that I can look back prior to being retired and say, okay, this is the week we're going sailing. if it rains all week, we're still sailing. Well, now if it looks like it's going to rain all week, I stay home. I'm not going to go sailing. We'll go the following week. And so I think that's a big piece of it. And I think that, he sails on the Chesapeake Bay. We've sailed down there a fair amount. We've chartered down there a bunch of times. It's a great place to sail. It's a lot bigger than Narragansett Bay, which is where I'm at. Narragansett Bay is like, I think, 35 miles long or something like that. It's pretty small, where Chesapeake's over 100. So it's got a lot of great places. I don't know. What struck you as sort of the differences in our sailing style?
Yeah, definitely kind of the scope of the trips that you take, right? You've done a lot more long distance sailing and been out on the ocean a lot more. But again, that's a function of you having time, right? And you having the size and type of boat that you've got that's pretty flexible. You know, you can do small day, one day sails with that and be really comfortable, or you can take it on a longer trip and be fine with it. So yeah, I think, the main difference from what I saw is just kind of how you use the boat and what type of sailing that you actually do. But I think the commonality was just that you both love what you do and you love sharing it with people that you care about, and you're both curious and want to learn always and really like to share what you learn with other people. And, we've always said this is kind of this really cool element that, from my outside perspective, runs through a lot of the sailing community, is this willingness to share and this willingness to give advice and this willingness to help and this willingness to build a community. And I think you've both done that not only through your sailing, but also through your podcasting and, through using the podcast as a platform to connect with people and connect other people with other people and kind of build this ecosystem of people that care about each other and want each other to be safe and have fun and enjoy, doing this whole cool idea of, environmentally friendly travel, right? In a place, in a way that you can get to know places and people and cultures, whether it's a long way away or right down the road. Or across the bay, you really have this cool opportunity. So I saw a lot of differences and similarities, but this kind of common core of, I think, curiosity and learning and sharing.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. One of the things that I really love about sailing, and as you know, I fish as well. I'm a fly fisher. I fly fish mainly. And both of those sports, as I like to say, look much harder than they really are. In a half hour, I can get you to cast a fly rod and go fly fishing. In a half hour, Mike, I can get you to go sail my boat. Maybe not dock it, but I can get you to sail it, right?
Don't run it aground, Mike.
Yeah. But if you want, you can spend the rest of your life learning about the fine points and the subtleties about these various different sports. So you can go, this is interesting to me because you can dive in as deep as you want or as shallow as you want, and for some people that deep dive is the enjoyment. It's that learning part that's really enjoyable. And to other people, they don't want to dive in deep, but they can still enjoy it because you don't have to be super, super skilled at these various different things to enjoy those activities. So that's one thing that's always appealed to me. And you know what, as I'm saying this, I'm thinking, well, the same thing is true about podcasting, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we put in some time to this, but we haven't dived in really, really deep, and we don't do a lot of post-production stuff. We don't do a lot of those things. Mm-hmm. We just basic sort equipment. Of do this as basic, and it works out fine for us. So I like those types of activities where you can, if you want, you can dive in deep, but if you don't want to dive in deep, you don't have to, and you can still have a great time.
Yeah, well put. The other thing that you guys both have in common, I think, is this engineer or kind of technically oriented mindset. And I think that was one thing also that you share in terms of the problem solving and troubleshooting on the boat and this idea of working on one problem after the next in kind of a sequence and doing things in an organized way. And I do think that helps in this, in a context like sailing. Where it is, even though it's just a simple boat that you floats on the water, there's a lot of interconnected systems. And if one of them screws up, you can put yourself and others at risk. So I do like the fact that both of you guys have this kind of systematic approach to sailing and making sure that, yeah, you have fun, but first and foremost, that the boat is sailworthy and you and the people on the boat are safe. And then the fun comes third, essentially, after kind of you know, the other two priorities. So that was one thing that I had in common. But yeah. I think it's really cool that you two guys could connect. And I guess I really agree with what you said early on in the conversation about how amazing it is that, you know, even 10 years, I think it was, or 15 years ago, you were saying, you couldn't produce and distribute this kind of material right. So easily to people. You had to go check a book out of the library, or maybe you'd catch a TV show, or, oh, remember VCR tapes? You could, you know, go to the library or the video store and get a video on this. But it's so easy now to share information, and you two guys have both taken that to, you know, kind of a really cool level of getting people interested and engaged in sailing. So I thought that's a really cool commonality, and it was kind of neat to hear the two of you kind of go at it a little bit and share, swap stories and share your philosophies.
Yeah. Well, I had a lot of fun talking to Jeff. I've been a longtime listener to his podcast. It was one of the very first sailing podcasts that I started listening to. So I've sort of known and admired Jeff for a long time. And then, you know, I actually got to talk to him and stuff and see him on the video and have a great conversation with him. So I really enjoyed it. It was wonderful.
Cool. Yeah. Well, what do you think? Time to wrap this one up?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Listeners, thanks for joining us for yet another episode. We hope that you found the conversation today interesting and thought-provoking as we did. If you have questions about what we've discussed today, please, as always, feel free to get in touch with us. Our email is sailingtheeast, that's all one word, @gmail.com.
And if you enjoyed the podcast, hit that follow button on your podcasting application and tell one of your friends. We'd love to have them listen to the show as well. So signing off until next time. See you soon, Mike.
Thanks, Bela, from over here in Münster, Germany. Auf Wiedersehen.